You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
How about that Biden bounce back?
Well, today has been a potpourri of a lot of news, and the Biden bounce back is one of the biggest pieces of news. It surprised the heck out of me, I gotta be honest.
Well, I'll tell you what, the race is on, okay, as far as I'm concerned, because all the flotsam, except for one person, is gone, okay?
Yes.
So, Mini Mike Bloomberg bailed out, he's gone.
Well,
it cost him like $12 million per delegate, but he will be the king of American Samoa. He got all five American Samoa delegates.
Maybe that is just going to be enough for him. I'm just, you know, he came into this thing, decided to come in late, took a big chance. You know what he thought? He underestimated the American people. He thought that he could buy his way in with TV ads and that we were dumb enough to watch the TV ads and vote for him. And I'm insulted about that, actually.
Well, you know, I follow what you're saying and I agree with what you're saying. And I think his strategy was to come in late in the game while everybody had spent all their money and then do exactly what you said, but then become the spoiler at the convention. But I think his mistake was he miscalculated, like you said, the American people, because you've got to make it to the convention. You've got to, your platform and you as an individual, as a leader, as a potential presidential hopeful, have got to resonate with the American people.
And you don't resonate by a TV commercial.
Absolutely.
You resonate by visiting the people, talking in person, doing a lot of interviews on different shows, and letting people see who you are and what your platform is. Nobody had any idea of what his platform was. I still don't know what it was.
Well, you know, and I think that's the way he runs his company. Now, he's a very successful multi-billionaire, but as I've talked about before, his personality is so different than President Trump's personality with respect to the workforce, meaning, you know, President Trump is pretty much a populist CEO. You know, he gets down to the actual worker, the construction worker, the salespeople, the average, you know, everyday people that work in his corporation worldwide. And Bloomberg doesn't do that. I think he's just an aloof executive. And he tried to run for president using that same philosophy. So the philosophy that makes you a multi-billionaire and the strategy that makes you a multi-billionaire is not the strategy that gets you elected as president of the United States.
No, okay? And besides that, it was the poor manners that really got to me, because when I saw him at one of the campaign events, digging his hands into a box of food, pulling off a piece, putting it back in the box for other people, and then licking his fingers as he ate his piece, I was like, oh, you know, that just did not resonate with me at all.
Did he put it back in the box for other people to eat?
The piece that he tore off, and he took one piece out to eat. And yeah, it was just kind of not. Listen, in the age of coronavirus, I don't want somebody doing that with food that I may be the next person to walk up to the table.
Well, I don't know. He might have gotten a few votes in Texas.
But anyway, the big news was Biden and his astounding comeback. I mean, really. And, you know, the polls, again, all over the country were wrong. Polls were wrong everywhere. And this is what is, people just can't look at those polls and count on them. They don't know what they're talking about half the time.
Well, you know, I absolutely agree with you. And I think you and I have been saying for many months now, okay, almost a year, as a matter of fact, as this thing began to take place, you know, this whole presidential election, everything, for God's sakes, don't trust the polls. Because, for instance, when you see these polls, and they're doing the same thing they did in 2016. Oh, Trump is way behind. Every single Democratic candidate could beat Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they can't even stay in the race, much less beat Trump.
Do you go into a restaurant? Do you go to church? Do you go to social organizations? Do you talk to people? You know, very few people are talking Biden and Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Mike, you know, Mini Mike. I mean, they're just not, and almost nobody was talking Buttigieg, right? I mean, almost nobody. So, for God's sakes, this is a good lesson to these people. I don't think the media is going to learn it. I think they're going to continue to go, you know, down that road and pre-project and be way off. Well, I can hardly wait for President Trump to get into this election, as you know, with the debates and everything like that. But you know what? There's a couple of other stories associated with Super Tuesday, and one of those stories is the close race between Biden and Bernie Sanders in both California and Texas, with Sanders winning California and Biden squeaking by in the state of Texas.
Well, that was to be expected in Calizuela, because they are very progressive there. And I think that you mentioned to me this morning, you said, well, you know, and that's what they get in California. I mean, that's what you get. Those are the reasons that we left California, because we don't want to live in that environment with people that would want a socialist to be the president.
And you know, that's exactly the point. And you stole it from me, Linda.
I'm sorry.
Okay, but that's okay. No, it's a good topic of conversation.
I was just trying to give you a lead in.
Well, it's okay. I mean, it's so accurate, right? Because look at, as we call it, Calizuela, right? So it, of all the states in the United States, California is the most left-leaning socialist, you know, with vestiges of socialism, more than just vestiges, large pockets of people voting for a socialist candidate, right? And like I said before, there's no difference between socialism, Marxist, communism. There's no difference whatsoever. And so Bernie pulled out, 50, what did he get? I'm sorry. He pulled out 57% of the vote.
Wow.
To Biden's 34%.
I didn't realize it was that big of a spread.
Okay. Yeah. So he just absolutely killed it as far as California is concerned.
Because you have San Francisco, you have
Sacramento. Well, the Niobrara County, Sacramento, Los Angeles. Right.
All those places are just uber liberal. And look at them. And what does it get them? It doesn't get them anything. And the people like us that, you know, are stand-up business people, that employ people, that work hard, they are the people that are leaving Calizuela.
Well, there's another byproduct to this whole thing. And this absolutely underscores what I've been saying for a long time. And I think you recently wrote an article about it. And that is, number one, two things. The people that are voting socialist Marxist, in other words, voting for Bernie Sanders, are younger people. So they're people under the age of 40 and younger. Okay? That's who's voting for Bernie Sanders.
Well, even under the age of 30,
so. But you know what? Here's my point. And you wrote about it, and that is, and we've talked about it many times, and that is, our educational system has been totally corrupted, usurped and corrupted. And so now you have all this revisionist history. It's just total BS history, no history whatsoever. A lot of it is made up history. They don't discuss democracy. They don't discuss capitalism. They don't discuss socialism, fascism, Marxism, Nazism. They don't discuss any of that stuff. You never hear about what happened in those socialist Marxist countries. They don't want to talk about Venezuela. They don't want to talk about the Eastern Bloc. They don't want to talk about the Cold War. They don't want to talk about Russia. They don't want to talk about communist China or North Korea or all these places where we have everything from socialism to strict Marxist communism. They don't teach the kids any of that stuff. And they don't teach civics. So you don't know anything about government. You have no idea what democracy is.
No idea why we fought the Civil War. No idea how we got from the shores of another country to this country and developed it the way that we did. There was a reason for all of those things. But you know what is in the history books in California? In the history books, the current governor, Gavin Newsom, put his name in the history books as being one of the greatest governors ever.
And you know, and again, as you said in your article, and I hope our listeners are going to read that article, Linda, on America Out Loud. And that is the people that have got kids are in school are so busy working that they're not engaged with their school boards and their PTAs, and the school boards are supposed to approve these history books, and there's like no oversight. Who are these people that are writing this you know, BS revisionist history, and who would let a governor, a standing governor, get his name into the history book? I mean, it's just absolutely disgraceful, and our kids know nothing, and their votes show that they know nothing. Let me give you a great example. One of the big propositions in Calisuela yesterday was the repeal of Proposition 13. Okay? And so for those people that don't understand, you know, California and Proposition 13, that was a proposition that was voted on, you know, significantly in favor by taxpayers, voters in California back in 1979. And what it did was it really helped the homeowner because the government, the state, could only tax for property taxes 1% of the purchase price of the house. Okay. And so that was a wonderful thing for property owners like ourselves that, you know, when we lived in Calisuela, we owned all sorts of different properties at different times. So the state has been blowing money like a drunk sailor, you know, tens of millions of dollars on illegal aliens and stuff like that. And so, you know, they want to screw the taxpayer out of even more money. And so the Attorney General, Becerra, and with the legislature and with the support of Governor Newsom, they wrote this convoluted repeal of Proposition 13 and called it an educational, you know, tax proposition.
Yeah, they always lie
okay?
about it.
And what they did is if you voted no for it, it meant yes. And if you voted yes for it, it meant that no, you know, the opposite. And just instead of saying, look, are you in favor of repealing Proposition 13? Yes or no? Right? That way people knew, okay, I know what Proposition 13 is. I know what it's going to do. It's going to raise everybody's property taxes. First, they're starting on businesses and commercial, you know, properties and all that. And then you're going to go into houses.
So what was the result?
Oh, well, thank God the voters saw through the fraudulent writing of the proposition, and they voted the repeal of Proposition 13 down 56-44, but they only won by 12%.
Yeah,
that's scary.
The reason is because people didn't understand what they were voting for. And, you know, I want to ask you how you felt about when we voted in Texas. By the way, you have to show your ID.
Twice.
Yes. And when they had propositions on the ballot.
We had five propositions on the ballot in Texas.
They were so entirely clear. I knew exactly what I was voting for or against when I read those. And I was really astounded because I've not seen that. In California, it's always convoluted and you never know what you're voting for. And they name it and call it and say things about it that make it seem like it's the opposite, as you said, of what it is, so that people get confused and they hope to get the vote.
Well, what I like about the proposition in Texas, and like I said, we had five of them in Texas, was that no proposition, the language on the ballot was longer than two sentences.
Yeah.
So you knew exactly what you were voting for or what you were voting against. And what was really cool is our good friends that just moved out here and are going to be neighbors, and we recruited them from Calizuela, they got to vote for their very first time, and they were so happy with the way that the voting is done in Texas, the checking of the IDs and the propositions, how easy they were.
I have to tell you something funny about the voting, though. So I was talking with our son, and I said, did you vote? And we had early voting for a couple of weeks before. So I asked him some time back, and I said, did you vote yet? And he said, no. I said, well, get down there and vote. He said, I don't need to vote because, you know, there's nobody, I mean, Trump's already on the ballot. He's going to be the Republican nominee. So I don't need to vote. And I said, oh, no. You need to get over there and vote for everybody else
exactly
down the line. And if there's more than one candidate, you need to figure out which one is the right one. And you need to vote for all those propositions. So
absolutely,
get your little fanny down there.
I hope you grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and dragged his butt the way down to the
voting.
He's
much bigger than I am anymore. But that doesn't work so much. But, you know, he still does listen to mom and went down and voted, as did our whole family. That's,
well, you know what I forgot to do? Okay, so our other boy lives in Calizuela, and I forgot to give him a call to find out if he voted. So right after we have our conversation, I'm on the phone.
Well, it's a little late now. Well, anyway, so Biden came out ahead, and now by the delegates, he is ahead of Bernie. So the burn is not feeling the burn right now, you know, and Bernie's a little upset about this, I see.
Well, and Mini Mike is gone, like we just talked about, and what is going to happen with Elizabeth Warren? Let's grab our first cup of coffee.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
What do you think is going to happen with Elizabeth Warren?
Well, I think she'll stick around for a while because there's something up her sleeve, as she knows she's not going to win. I'm not really sure which of the two candidates she is in favor of. And if she sticks around, I think she pulls votes from Bernie. And she has not been, uber friendly to Bernie lately.
Yeah, but you know what? Philosophically and her ideology is so in tune with Bernie. Okay. They had that one little problem where she said, hey, did you call me a liar? They had that one, but that's, you know, sort of in the heat of battle, when they're doing the debate. And we've heard worse from candidates. And
I don't think she's a person who forgets.
But
here's the thing, Ron. I don't see Joe Biden as being a whole lot different than Bernie. And that's how I feel about it. I think that every single candidate that they put forth this year was way farther to the left than I've ever seen in any election. So even though Biden may be more quote unquote moderate than Bernie, he's got some pretty radical ideas himself.
Well, you know, I'm going to disagree with you and agree with you. And here's the way I see Biden. I'm not going to talk about the character. I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about straight political ideology, at least what he has represented while he's been running for office. And I would not call Joe Biden a moderate.
No.
Okay, so I agree with you there. He is absolutely left to the center. He is pro open borders. He's pro illegal alien amnesty.
Pro getting rid of our guns.
Yep, pro getting rid of our guns. And when he offered Beto O'Rourke from here in Texas to be his get their gun czar, what he did is I think he forever sealed the fate of Beto O'Rourke, because except around El Paso and that congressional district where he was a congressman down on the border next to Juarez, Mexico, he is not a liked individual in the state of Texas. But I will say this, in the liberal bastions of Texas, and Texas is no different than any other state, every place where you have universities in the state of Texas, you have got an extremely liberal population.
And there you go again. We're talking about the educational system.
No, exactly right, Lynn. And so, you know, where are the areas where we have universities and colleges in Texas? So, you know, in El Paso area, you know, we've got a university there. And then when you go up to Austin, where our state capital is, you got a couple of three universities there. You bounce over to Dallas-Fort Worth, and you've got universities there. You go down to San Marcos, there's a university there. And you bounce down to Houston, and obviously universities there. And one last place,
San Antonio.
San Antonio. Yep. And when you take a look, and the rest of Texas is rural. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, pretty much it's all rural. And so what he did is he went out there strategically, gathered the university professors, the propagandists, and got all the liberal college students to vote for him. But you want to talk about a guy who's a socialist without saying that he's a socialist. And that's Beto O'Rourke, a fake Mexican. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's a guy, and I won't even go into it. I mean, he's got a criminal history. I don't know where the hell he got his name, Beto. He's an Irishman, a white Irishman that comes off like he's a Mexican.
Well, his name is Robert, and Beto is a takeoff of Roberto Robert.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's trying to pretend he's something that he's not. Okay. So you know what he does? Okay. Here's the progressive left term for that. He's stealing culture.
Oh,
he's stealing culture.
Well, he's going to steal your guns if you don't lock them up.
But you get what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But going back to Elizabeth Warren, I'm going to give her through the weekend. Okay, that's what I'm giving her. I'm giving her through the weekend, and I think I'm giving her a lot. Okay, because here's what I think's going on right now. I think there's a bury the hatchet meeting going on between Elizabeth Warren's team and Bernie Sanders' team, because their ideology, and I'm going out on a ledge on this, okay, so you can throw it back in my face if I'm wrong, you know, when we have another conversation. But I think if she was smart, she would saddle up next to Bernie and run as his vice president against Joe Biden because she is so far away politically, ideologically from Joe Biden. I can't see her committee or her crew going over to Biden and making a deal with Biden. Do you think I'm wrong? Do you think I'm way off there?
I don't know. You know what? Here's the sense I get from her. I think she likes the game.
Oh, no. I think she likes the game. And I think, but I'll say this. I think it's more than a game to her. She's a believer. She's a true believer, just like Bernie Sanders. You know, these are true believers. So if you are that far to the left, I mean, she's right next to socialism, then why would you join a camp with Joe Biden? Okay, why would you join that camp? Now, the only thing that she could maneuver with Joe Biden is to try to bring her delegates over there and then Biden give her a cabinet seat. Okay, that's what she would maneuver. I'll tell you why. I say that because if I was a politician and I was in her spot, ideologically, I'd go with Bernie and run as his VP and see if that is a sizable voting block to make something happen at the convention, right? Because don't forget, this is still going to be a brokered convention. This is going to be tough. They got to make, what, 1,900? They got to get 1,900 delegates.
I don't know, because Biden is on such a roll that he may go ahead and make that. Now, I think she'll hook up with whoever can do her the most good.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And she hasn't decided that yet.
Okay, and right now, the delegate count, I've been paying attention, the delegate count is 566 for Biden and 501 for Sanders and only 61 for Warren. Okay,
yeah, so she's not a huge help to either of them.
You're raising a good point right now, because 61 delegates ain't a hell of a lot unless you're locked in mortal combat, you know, between Biden and Bernie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said at the very beginning of this whole race, it's just fasten your seatbelts because this is an ever-changing race. But you remember 2016 was an ever-changing race for the Republicans. So the Democrats are having their turn at it. Now, speaking of these races, and you have the pundits on TV, right? And we've had a lot of nasty pundits on TV.
Yeah, you know, I think the pundits get emotionally captured, just like the people do. But the people, you know, it goes back to your old philosophy of, you know, the politician being dysfunctional parents and the people are the children of the politicians, and whatever the politicians do, the people do. But I think it's the same way with the media, don't you? I think that when you have some nasty pundits, you're going to have nasty people. And you know what? Speaking of nasty people, I want to ask you your impression. Of all the Democrats that have been running, who do you think has the nastiest people?
Oh, Bernie.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
So, ding, answer.
Bernie is always, he always looks angry. His gestures are angry. People say that when they go to his events, that it gets kind of tiresome watching somebody angry for an hour straight, you know? I mean, I wouldn't like that at all. And one thing, I really like watching Trump. I think I've seen Trump just numerous times, because if he does an event somewhere,
a rally,
and I am available, I will turn it on to watch it, even if it's just a piece of it. I get a kick out of him. I get a kick out of his enthusiasm and his delivery, and I get a kick out of the enthusiasm of the people in the crowd. He's not standing there looking angry, and I don't like that one bit about Bernie. I just would never want that to be the president of the United States. That is so unpresidential.
So, Linda, you've been talking about enthusiasm in President Trump, with his enthusiasm and his vigor. So I want to talk to you about, and I'm not trying to be demeaning towards Joe Biden. I'm trying to call it as I see it, and as a lot of media pundits have called it as well. So I'm just going to ask you an open-ended question, and I want to have a conversation about it. What do you think about the level of enthusiasm and vigor of Joe Biden in comparison to Donald Trump.
Oh my gosh.
Moving forward to the election. Now don't forget, they're gonna run this thing all the way to November now. Let's just say Biden's the candidate. Let's just say he wins the delegates and he wins the convention and he becomes the nominee and it's him against President Trump. What do you think, compare and contrast the vigor, the enthusiasm, and the mental acumen of those two people?
Okay, well, do you remember when we saw, after the Mueller investigation was over, and they had Mueller come in and testify, and we were actually pretty shocked about...
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
About how he
had kind of gone downhill.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Joe Biden. I don't feel that he has a full deck anymore. I really don't. And to have somebody be the president of the United States scares me like that. He doesn't speak well. He doesn't look well. I don't think he has the stamina. And I also think that, you know, this investigation has been opened in the Ukraine now, about his son, and that involves him and the decisions that he made with the quid pro quo. Yeah. I think all that is going to come back to bite him.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't want to drag you off into left field. I want to bring you back.
Okay.
And I want to talk about the difference between the two men. And again, you know, I mean, just for our listeners, I'm not trying to be offensive towards, you know, Joe Biden. I'm just calling it the way I see it. And, you know, to me, he just looks so much more physically older than Donald Trump. Chronologically, he's older. He's a few years older. But when I look at him, he looks tired. He looks worn out. His skin is translucent, okay? And I'm seeing him to be forgetful, befuddled at times, sort of a lack of situational awareness, you know, stuff like that. And I can't help that, you know, sort of some senior issues, you know, or some geriatric senior issues are happening with him. And, you know, it's actually, to me, when I look at it, it's kind of sad because we all get old. Okay, we do. And, you know, we've seen this before, you know, in relatives. But I think when you get a certain age, you know, it's really time to stop. I will, again, go out on a limb here, but I question whether Joe Biden can survive mentally, if not physically, if he can survive a grueling you know, race to the finish line. If you remember back in 2006, Trump was literally going out every single day.
2016, I'm not 20. Yeah.
Look at me. And I'm talking about Joe, right? But I mean, every single day, President Trump was crisscrossing the United States.
Oh, and he still is.
And he was looking stronger and stronger and stronger. And if you remember, at the beginning of the campaign, when Jeb Bush was running against Trump, Bush just looked, you know, slow and tired, and he was a much younger man than Donald Trump.
You know, it could be age. I mean, certainly age would have something to do with it, but people age differently, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think that Trump has done well with his aging. Trump thrives on this, and it's like catnip to him, where I think to Joe it's like kryptonite to him.
No, you know, I it's so funny that you made that analogy, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. One of the things that, I mean, I have so much respect for the president of the United States in, is that he goes through this whole impeachment trial, and he's doing all these other things for the United States and moving America forward at the same time that he's under all that intense pressure. And when he get, and he's doing rallies too, right? So he's doing all these different things. He's working on the trade bills. He's doing the wall. He's doing stuff for veterans. He's doing, I mean, he's all over the place, for God's sakes. And then he's traveling all over the United States doing these rallies. And the whole time he's being impeached. And you remember the rally when they said to him, man, doesn't this get you down? And he goes, you know what? The American people give me the strength that it takes for me to invigorate me. And he goes, I don't get bothered by this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I think any other man, and I would raise my hand, if that was happening to me, oh my God, you know. So it takes a particular type of person and character to be able to put up with all that pressure and still come out far ahead. You ready for our last cup of coffee?
I am.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, one other interesting thing that happened in Super Tuesday is, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been trying to get very progressive Democrats elected in different places. So she has been helping them fundraise, providing them money that she's raised, and really trying to get them into the system. So there are a number of them around the country, but three in particular were involved in the race that happened on Super Tuesday, two in Texas and one in San Diego. the two in Texas, really, they went down. Okay, so the public, Texans, thank you, they did not buy it. San Diego, Calzuela, that one person will be in a runoff for the position. So actually, not a runoff, but the top two
are going to run off.
Candidates,
sure.
They will be in the election in November. So one of her proteges will be in the election. However, she is, of the two, got far less votes than the other one, who is not the progressive.
Okay.
So if that would be the case, I can probably confidently say that she will not win that position. So interesting that America is hopefully seeing what's going on here and not liking it.
Well, people have to, you know, get the emotions out of the way and look at any candidate to see what that candidate is doing for that district. And, you know, I've been paying a lot of attention to New York City and, you know, where her district is, and it's Queens. And what has been going on in Queens? And nothing has been going on in Queens. Remember, she got rid of basically 25,000 Amazon jobs.
Oh, I know.
Because Amazon was going to build that huge operation distribution center there. You're going to give 25,000 people a job there. And then, you know, as you and I know, look at all the support industries that pop up around there.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all so
the
restaurants.
Food and the cleaners,
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that stuff. And all those people basically got screwed out of that because of one person. You know, look how powerful these people are. And I know, and I don't remember the Democrat's name, but he was a big deal in the Democratic Party, remember? And he didn't do anything. He kind of sat on his laurels and was disengaged with the people in Queens and you know, stayed in Washington, D.C. And before he knew it, she cleaned his clock. And look at what the people of Queens have had to put up with since then.
Yes, and her money is not coming from the people of Queens. It's coming from outside.
That's exactly right.
Now, there are a lot of good candidates running against her.
On the Republican side.
On the Republican
and
side.
And on her side.
And even on the Democratic side, right. I would prefer almost any of them over her.
Correct.
So, you know, when it comes time for Queens to vote, I hope that they really pay attention. Another thing that I just want to mention is what I've noticed, again, I've noticed it many times over, but the Democratic Party just seems to be an angry party. They have angry candidates. They have angry Donna Brazile, you know, telling on air the head of the Republican
committee
to go to hell. Not once, but twice.
Right.
On air. I mean,
okay.
I
find that. And on Fox News.
Yeah,
okay, and on Fox News. What are you thinking?
I find that pretty shocking.
You've got this woman working for you. What are you thinking? You've got an angry black woman working for you on Fox News. And had that been a Republican that told the Democrat to go to hell, you know what? They would be off Fox News the next day. Okay? They would not be returning.
That's probably the case. And then you have somebody who I think is always angry is Chuck Schumer.
Well, look what Chuck Schumer just did in threatening two sitting United States Supreme Court justices, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, during that pro-abortion rally, you know, the pro-abortion rally, and goes ahead and threatens them, telling them, you'll never know what hit you. And then when Chief Justice John Roberts steps in there and chastises him, thank God. Thank you, Chief Justice. Hopefully, you know, you're a little bit liberal. I hope this woke you up. You know, that Chuck Schumer, angry, threatening, intimidating, spitting over the line so he doesn't commit a crime, right, because he's not inciting violence, but he's certainly intimidating those two Supreme Court justices, that man ought to be impeached, for God's sakes. And I hope John Roberts, I'm sure you don't listen to Talking While Married, but if you were, I would tell you, you better take those other chief justices together and take them out for a cup of coffee and tell them, look what you guys have done here, okay, because you reap what you sow. And all of a sudden now, you've got angry Democrats through the liberals, Supreme Court justices have supported all the way. Now you've got the Democrats threatening United States Supreme Court justices?
Well, and you have Sotomayor, who is one of those justices, who is criticizing the other justices and our president. So, I mean, they've got to stop politicizing that. But, you know, one of these cases that are bringing up all of this emotion is the abortion cases.
Well, you know, the Roe v. Wade, you know, looking right at Roe v. Wade again.
But the biggest pro-life case right now is brought to the Supreme Court by a Louisiana Democrat, Ron, a black woman by the name of Katrina Jackson. She's their state senator, and she is a pro-life Democrat. And her case is before the Supreme Court, and what she wants is that physicians or people that are performing abortions must have hospital privileges. And that was something that was changed a few years back so that Planned Parenthood could continue to do abortions and not have doctors have hospital privileges. Well, she feels that it's for the safety of women that it's very important. So this case is up to the Supreme Court, and it's bringing up a lot of emotions. I totally agree with her. I'm proud of her for standing up for women and for standing up for, you know, that doctors. I'm not. She's pro-life. Okay,
right, I get
she
it.
Wouldn't have abortions at all. But if she can't change that, she's at least changing that she wants to make
women.
It safer.
I totally
so,
get it.
You know, and at the same time, the very same time, we have our Congress that quashed a ruling to be able to not have babies that are attempted to be aborted but are yet born alive. To have doctors
care.
Save them.
Right. And, I mean, and to have medical pay for medical care.
What kind of people would do that to a baby? Just leave it to die? I just don't get it. So I'm very frustrated with the angry people. I sound like an angry person right now. An angry people in the Democratic Party with their language, with their threats, and with their disrespect for life.
You know, I've said this many times. With regards to Bernie Sanders, you know, his supporters who really are angry supporters, some of the things that his supporters do, you know, absolutely border and cross the line with regards to violence. The people that have been involved in vandalizing, you know, Trump campaign headquarters have been found to be Bernie, you know, supporters. I'm concerned that if Bernie gets, you know, knocked out of the box in the convention or whatever, his people will turn to violence. Because when you look at the leader, just like you said, when you look at the candidate, every time you see this guy, he's angry. Okay.
Yeah,
and you get a lot of dysfunctional people that follow that.
Exactly.
And they practice that violence. And I go back to my knowledge of pre-World War II history with the brown shirts in the Nazi movement. And they would go out when Hitler was coming to power. And of course, he was always angry. You never saw a calm Adolf Hitler when he was giving a speech, giving a rally. And they would go out and they would just absolutely destroy Jewish businesses. And anybody that wasn't a pro-Nazi, they would ruin their businesses. They would beat people up. You know, they had the whole Kristallnacht with that one
yes,
night.
Yes.
I can't remember the town, whether it was Vienna or was one of these other towns. And they went through there and just destroyed all those Jewish businesses. You know, the Kristallnacht, meaning the broken glass
yes.
Of all the glass windows and, you know, everything like that. And I just worry about the Bernie people doing stuff like that. So
yeah.
This is going to be a tooth and nail fight to the end. I'm a little bit worried about the safety of people. And for idiots like Chuck Schumer that would go in a public place and would verbally threaten sitting members of the United States Supreme Court, I tell you, shame on you.
Not only shame on him, but if you or I did that, we would probably be arrested.
Oh, I think we would be. I think
that somebody ought to be looking at that and not let these guys get away with it. I want to switch gears. So this morning, we're sitting in bed as we always are in the morning, having a cup of coffee, and the news comes on. So I'm watching the news, and you were
getting my cup of coffee.
Well, you were getting ready to go to work early, yeah. And I was staying in bed a few minutes more. And I was actually watching Fox, and I saw that, you know, they go in the restaurants in different states.
After, they go in the diners and they talk to people.
After every primary or caucus.
Or rally.
Yeah. So they go in and talk to people, and they get kind of the 411 from them. Well, it was so interesting because I was watching first one person go into one diner in Vermont, and then I was watching another person go into another diner in Tennessee. And it just really struck me. So I called you in, and I said, okay, I'm going to pause this and rewind it. You have to see this, and I want you to tell me who these people remind you of. So I played the whole thing, and after it was done, actually, you didn't say anything. I said, don't they remind you of you and I? Those people were talking just like you and I talk in our home right now and at our dinner table and with our friends. They said the same exact things. They were concerned about the education. They were concerned about
immigration.
Yeah. I mean, they were
concerned about the destiny of America.
They were glad that Biden came out over Bernie, but they're still very concerned about both of them. You know, like it's like the best of two evils there, right?
You know, one of the things that I really liked about that truly resonated with me is when you said, well, who do they sound like? You know, and my comment was, they sound like talking while married.
Yes.
Okay. And I just think, and I don't know whether it's self-congratulatory or whatever, but I'm just really proud of the work that we do. Oh, there comes the dog.
And Desi woke up.
You know, I'm proud of the work that we do when we have, these coffee conversations. And I think we have our finger on the pulse of America. A good percentage of the people in the United States, like those people that we saw in those diners and that we see all the time on television, and who we run into in the store or at church or in different get-togethers, and when we bring friends and meet new people. And I think it's really gratifying. And I love doing the research that we do when we have these coffee conversations. And I'm really grateful for America Out Loud and Malcolm Out Loud for providing us this opportunity and this platform to have these conversations at night and to reach out to listeners and followers and try to make their day a little bit more informative and a little bit more interesting and maybe sometimes funny and a little bit happy.
Well, and I think that because you and I have these conversations, regardless of talking while married, and we always have every day, we listen to the news, we get involved in it, we try to learn what's really right and what's wrong. And what I see is that so many people don't have time in their life to do that. They don't have time to do the research. They get overwhelmed with the news that they hear and they don't know what to believe. And so that's kind of the goal, is to really hash out these things. You and I don't agree on everything, and we might have a different opinion, but the thing is that I absolutely believe that our conversations are no different than the majority of Americans sitting at their tables with their families. They just don't get to put it on the radio. And, you know, it's a pleasure to do, and it's something that's very natural for you and I because we do it all the time anyway.
Well, I think as long as we've been married, and even before that, we've always had, wonderful conversations. And I think it's important that couples communicate. I think that's, when we came together on the concept of the show, it was going to be about you know, talking while married. It wasn't going to be any different, like you said, than you and I sitting together in bed with a cup of coffee in the morning and watching
throwing
television.
Throwing
shoes at the news. Or when we sit and we're having a drink, or we're having a nice dinner together, or we're talking with our kids or our friends, and it's spontaneous. You know, we pick our stories, but we also have a lot of spontaneous conversations. But there's always that truth to the conversation, and it speaks to the vetting that we do. It speaks to the research we do. And you know what, Linda? Not everybody, like you said, not everybody has time to do it. We're both very busy, you know, business people. We travel, my God, all over the place. But I'm lucky to be married to a woman with her hair on fire, and I truly. Love this time. And I want to compliment you for a minute. I mean, I love this time that we take nightly. We're together. This is our time for you and me to be together and share a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or a beer or some Texas whiskey and just have these wonderful and thought-provoking, you know, conversations.
I totally agree with you. And even Desi takes part sometimes. So.
It is. So this was a good conversation, and I'm looking forward to our next one.
Yep. There'll be a lot more to talk about, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.